Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Before we dive into the film The Social Ones, the hilarious mockumentary about the lives of social media celebrities, we wanted to do a quick check-in on the real business of sponsored content. Last week, the FTC filed a lawsuit against a beverage company called Teamy for making unsubstantiated health claims about its drinks and paying influencers, including Grammy winner Cardi B, to promote their products without disclosing the payments. Teamy has reportedly agreed to settle the charges. This story is pretty big for the influencer business because before now it was unusual for the commission to take action and hold companies accountable for misleading social media posts. And we're not talking small change. Teamy has agreed to pay $1 million as part of the settlement. Even in the normal course of business, companies pay some influencers tens and even hundreds of thousands of dollars just to have their products featured in a single Instagram post. To explain why last week's news is significant and to put it in the context of the influencer industry, I'm joined now by New York Times reporter Taylor Lorenz. Taylor, welcome to All of It.
Thanks for having me.
So Taylor, how did these spaces online that claim to be designed for social interaction become money-making platforms?
Yeah, well, I mean, just because they're spaces for social interaction is exactly why they're so valuable to marketers. These are where people are going, you know, for advice on what to buy from their friends, from influencers, from celebrities. And so they're very powerful marketing tools.
So who were the first big influencers?
on the platform? Like, who's an influencer?
Yes.
Or who were the first
ones to sort of break through?
That would be like asking, like, who are the first celebrities? it's kind of an impossible question to answer. There's millions of influencers. I mean, obviously there's sort of celebrity adjacent influencers like Kim Kardashian, who, you know, has made a lot of money, selling sponsored content on her social feeds. But then there are tons of, you know, kind of homegrown influencers, people that essentially are internet creators and entrepreneurs that make a living by selling products or selling sponsorships or, you know, monetizing their audience on these platforms. And they're in every industry. You know, there are travel influencers, there are food influencers, there are fashion influencers. And these are all people that, you know, millions of users look to online to inform their lifestyle choices and shopping habits and things like that.
So it's interesting. I do want to make clear there's two different kind of groups. There's the celebrity sort of endorsement like Kim Kardashian, but then there's a shift from that to people who are technically not famous for anything other than kind of being famous.
No. They're very much famous for legitimate reasons,
okay.
Just the same way that Kim Kardashian is famous for legitimate reasons. And I would say Kim Kardashian, unlike a traditional celebrity like Jennifer Aniston, I think Kim Kardashian is very much an influencer herself. Same with her sister Kylie, you know, because of the ways that they monetize, you know, their internet presence and kind of build these brands online. And by the way, these other influencers, they're not famous for being famous. They're famous for having expertise in a specific area. So, you know, if you're looking to buy a new vacuum, for instance, there are vacuum influencers. These are people that know absolutely everything about every vacuum. Maybe they worked in the industry for years themselves, and now they create content 24/7, you know, reviewing vacuums, talking about the industry, talking about that type of thing. And so, you know, getting someone like that who has credibility in a specific area to endorse or sell your product is very powerful. And that is, you know, why these people make money.
So those are the ones that are very successful, the people who have some sort of expertise, and by using
Which
social
is all
media
of them, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah, and
they all have some sort of expertise that people are looking to them for their, you know, yeah, advice on.
Well, how do you go? I guess my question is, how do you go from being someone who has expertise to being an influencer? Because there are a lot of people with all different kinds of expertise.
Right, of course, right. And, you know, to be an influencer, you have to also be able to generate an audience. And by the way, your expertise, you know, it doesn't have to be so specific as, like, vacuums. Your expertise can just be that, like, you're kind of celebrity adjacent yourself, or you have this very aspirational lifestyle, and so you're an expert at kind of living the dream. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be so, like, kind of specific. But a lot of people, you know, they're very good at generating an audience. They're very good at speaking to that audience, and they often work, you know, tirelessly. These people are working much harder than, just your average kind of, person that runs maybe an interest-based newsletter. They're creating content 24/7. They're, you know, maybe making videos, responding to messages, working with brands, things like that. They are like mini entrepreneurs.
Taylor Renz is a New York Times reporter. She's talking to us about the business of influencers. So where's the biggest concentration of influencers at this moment?
YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, those are all kind of the primary platforms for influencers and influencer marketing.
Is there one that's a preferred that seems to be sort of the hub?
No, all of them are. I mean, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram are all the major three. YouTube is great for allowing people to directly generate revenue through, you know, pre-roll ads. Instagram is great for, you know, more of the lifestyle and shopping type of direct shopping advertising. And TikTok is where the youth are. So it's very good for, you know, youth marketing and kind of like meme-like campaigns and things like that. But all three of those platforms are the dominant players in this space.
What kind of money are we talking about?
I mean, billions of dollars. I believe influencer marketing is set to top $22 billion next year. It's a huge, and that's not even counting the products that these people launch themselves. That's just ad deals. So it's massive and pervasive, and I mean, it's a dominant form of marketing for many businesses.
So if I'm looking at an Instagram post today, will I be able to tell that it's an ad or that someone is making money off of it?
Is the problem, and that is what the FTC is trying to regulate. You would hope that you would be able to tell it's an ad. Sometimes, you know, an influencer will post hashtag ad or hashtag sponsored or use Facebook's branded content tool. But, you know, increasingly, it's very, very difficult to tell what's an ad. I would say the majority of influencers that I see don't always follow 100% of these guidelines. Maybe they use a sponsored hashtag, but they're not using the word ad. Maybe they're not, you know, onboarded onto Facebook's branded content tool, so they actually aren't able to use that. We saw that with a lot of the influencer political marketing that's been happening for big presidential campaigns like Bloomberg. So it's very hard for users, and that is, you know, what the FTC needs to get a handle on.
So I mentioned that what happened last week, the FTC ordered this detox tea company, Temu, to return $1 million to its consumers. What did Temu do?
Well, right. Basically, they finally cracked down on these kind of predatory, deceptive marketing, campaigns. Basically, what they were saying is that these influencers are making, was kind of promoting unsubstantiated health claims about this tea. According to the FTC complaint, I believe the Temu website claimed that the teas could, like, fight cancer, stop migraines, treat colds, lead to substantial weight loss, and then kind of promoted these influencers to use these influencers to promote those message. So, yeah, they're finally fining people and holding, you know, these brands accountable, which is something that they have not done for so long. They created these guidelines, but there was no financial recourse. Influencers were not receiving these really sternly worded warning letters, saying that they need to explain exactly to FTC how they plan to properly disclose ads in the future. And the companies themselves weren't being fined. So I think now we're seeing that, you know, FTC kind of put their money where their mouth is in terms of, like, actually, you know, looking into these complaints and tying, you know, financial stuff to it.
So BuzzFeed News reported that, quote, to date, the FTC has only filed legal action against brands or advertising agencies, never the influencers promoting their products. So how noteworthy is that they've been so focused on the brands and the ad agencies, and could that change?
Yeah. I mean, I think that holding these influencers accountable is a step. But ultimately the brands are the ones responsible, and a lot of these influencers are not always aware, you know, of the fact that some of these brands might be lying about their health claims, for instance. So I think it's great. I think that all members of these kinds of marketing schemes should be held accountable. Influencers should be held accountable for promoting misleading products and for not doing their due diligence. And brands should be held accountable for making misleading claims.
My guest is Taylor Lorenz. She is a writer for the New York Times, and we're talking about the power of influencers. Vox reported last February how major drug companies are now relying on influencers to sell their products. Mike Bloomberg tried to run a presidential campaign based on sponsored content. When you think about it, how are influencers transforming establishment and legacy institutions and industries?
Well, they're completely upending all of it, and they have been for almost a decade. Brands are shifting their online marketing dollars towards influencer marketing. It's becoming, as everyone is more and more connected, being able to influence people at scale is only becoming more powerful. So I think that people are starting to recognize that, hey, it's not just flat tummy tea that you can sell this way. You know, you can sell any message and any product this way in a really effective, to a really effective extent. Political campaigns, drugs, everything. I mean, there are influencers in every single industry. That is why, this form of marketing is so powerful. So I think it's only going to become more pervasive as these social networks continue to scale.
How do you see the role of influencers when we talk about issues of disinformation?
I mean, it's a huge, huge problem. There are big influencers that are regularly promoting disinformation, not just health misinformation, but political misinformation and lots of other problems. That's been an issue on YouTube for a long time. It's also something that Instagram needs to crack down on more, and now we're seeing it on TikTok. When you have these people with a mass audience and essentially, no one sort of fact-checking their claims, often they can spread, really dangerous misinformation. I mean, look at what, Russia did with the 2016 election. One Senate intelligence report said that, these massive misinformation accounts that were essentially using influencer marketing tactics on Instagram were really powerful in sort of disseminating these messages. So, yeah, I mean, having an audience is powerful, and if you promote misinformation to that audience, they're going to be more likely to believe it because they have this very deep connection, with accounts that they rely on in an influencer way, so it can be very dangerous.
What advice would you give to someone who is scrolling through Instagram and wants to sort of be an informed scroller, I guess?
Yeah, I would say just, keep a lookout on things, I would say, read every post with a grain of salt. If you see someone promoting Nike sneakers or, some certain brand over and over again, chances are they're getting paid or they're trying to get paid. So, just keep an eye out. And by the way, there's a lot of legacy media companies like Condé Nast, for instance, that allow their, fashion editors and stuff to have branded content deals. So I think it's not just, these influencers that are kind of just Instagram or people that are engaging with this. It's many other people. It's people in traditional media and, people that are professionals in different areas themselves. So just every post, if you see something, just do your homework yourself, as a consumer, do your own research online before just buying something because somebody tells you on Instagram to buy it.
My guest has been New York Times style reporter Taylor Lorenz. Hey, Taylor, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.